Hi, my name is Michael Kramer, and welcome to the We Make It Work Corporate Real Estate Podcast. This is the third in a British Council of Offices series and features the president of the BCO, Despina Katsakakis, who is also head of Total Workplace at Cushman & Wakefield, and Rob Harris of Remedus Consulting, who is chair of the BCO Research Committee. So everything we're going to talk about is certainly relevant to anyone interested in the built environment anywhere in the world. Welcome to you both. Despina, if we start with you, maybe you could just describe briefly what the mandate of the BCO is and the latest conference that you just had.
Sure. Thank you, Michael. Great to be here. So the BCO was established in 1990 as the primary forum that researches, develops, and communicates best practice in all aspects of commercial real estate and offices to shape the workplace of the future. We have over 4,500 members representing all aspects of the industry, and research really lies at the core of what the BCO does. With taking on the presidency, one of the primary responsibilities before you take on the presidency is to chair the conference, the annual conference, which we held this year in Dublin in early June. And the theme of this conference was very much looking at the unprecedented change that's happening in the industry. So we focus on the theme of resilience and inspiration, which begins to resonate with the current landscape of change that's taking place in our industry.
Great. And Rob, I'll sit over to you. Maybe you could talk about the research work that you're doing and how that all comes together.
Sure thing, Michael. Thank you. Yes, indeed. In collaboration with Despina, we were thinking about the research program and what it was doing and the direction it was taking. We came to the view that we should pause for breath and look at all the changes that are taking place around us and give the program some direction that was directly looking at those issues. So we decided to look at four particular areas, which we call pillars, which are ESG, technology, the economy, and business. Now, they're all interrelated, they're all completely overlapping, but it was an easy way, it was a way of breaking down the sea into manageable pieces to look at. So we have the four pillars. We've gone away, we've done some research on those pillars and looked at what the big questions are for industry, not just in terms of aspects of specification, for example, but the bigger societal and economic changes that are impacting what we do. And going forward, those four pillars will underpin our research program and our thinking, and hopefully the output from those research projects. In all of that, we don't just produce reports about best practice any longer, but we also produce reports which inform the BCO's thinking and its strategy.
Okay, and if we think about the developer-investor side of this, and I'm bouncing back and forward just a minute, but one of the things we talked about ahead of this is the social relevance of real estate. And it seems to me that this has really come front and center. A lot of people are thinking about trying to understand. You can think it maybe the S in ESG. How does that fold into what this research is doing?
The research pillars are actually informing the complete cycle of real estate. So what we're trying to look at is how real estate can become an active agent for change across all aspects from policy and planning, funding and leasing, design and specification, operations and management. But the purpose, the outcome of that is social relevance. If you think about real estate, it always has social relevance, whether we choose to manage what that is or not. And we are in a unique moment of change where the boundaries have blurred between work and life, between where work happens, what the impact is on communities, on cities, on the economic resiliency and sustainable aspects of the places that we live and work in. So our focus is to begin to really look at how we address the things we do, but also how we do them, how we look at new skills, new partnerships, new stakeholders that are necessary to create the complex and viable places of the future.
Okay, and Rob, I guess my thought, as Despina says it, is how is that going to happen, or how is your research going to help drive that? Because it's a fundamental shift, but like everything, it's then a question, maybe that costs more money for developers or owners or for the users of the space as we shift what we do. So How are you weaving in the research that you're running, those four pillars, into that societal shift in the way we want to live our lives?
It's simply to think that we can carry on in the way we have in the past. That is to say, we simply drop these big lumps of real estate into cities and towns and communities and then walk away from them and come back later on to demolish and rebuild them. We have to build what we're doing into the fabric of society and to have local accountability, responsibility, but also more nationally and globally as well. So it's at all levels we need to apply that social responsibility. And by looking at these four pillars, in where we have the technology, the economics, the business, and the ESG, the plan is that we build each of those strands of thinking into our research projects. And there's a wraparound of social relevance. So instead of producing reports, a series of reports on particular topics that are very specific, which we're very good at, we produce more general reports which look at these wider trends. And somebody, for example, a layperson, could pick up a report, read it, and understand it. And we need to make messages in those reports applicable to a wider audience. So whilst we're at the British Council for Offices, in Tathrina's terms, looking at, for example, policy and planning, our research needs to indicate to policy and planning make people why it's relevant to what they're doing and why it's relevant to spatial planning, for example. So it's making sure that our messages are around the four pillars and the social wrap rather than simply around areas of specification, quite narrowly focused areas.
And I know we say it's the VCO, but presumably building on what you said, Despina, we can't think of offices in isolation to anything else, be it retail, maybe even in industrial last mile deliveries. I'm thinking about as we sit here in the City of London, what the planners do and don't want in terms of job creation. And so it is very complex. So how's that going to unfold, if you like? Or how do you see that changing? Is the VCO going to have to look at different types of real estate other than just pure offices, I assume?
Well, this is about partnering with various stakeholders to begin to address the fundamental issue that it is, you know, the boundaries of work and life have completely shifted. So when we talk about work, go to a place, to a particular place to work, we can work from anywhere across a very complex ecosystem that might involve the office, might include the home, might include public realm and third places. So if we think about it that way, when we talk about real estate asset classes, we still think of them as single asset types. We think about office versus multifamily housing, for example. But in fact, people work within multifamily housing, and therefore we need to think about asset classes very differently. We need to think about how the funding of those asset classes works, how we begin to zone cities to create more compelling and complex conditions. So we need new indices, new metrics that allow us to track what is value in this new context of work. And I think that's a really big issue that we're not hearing a lot of in the press. We're hearing a lot about how much people are going to the office or not going to the office. But how do you actually measure the value of place?
And Rod, can you build on that? Because clearly there's a part of that, which is to do with the planning regimes that exist in the UK, which a lot has been done. But again, presumably the research is going to be focused on, if you like, how to influence what planning does and doesn't allow so that this, let's say, this new way in which we are living and working and doing everything else we want to do can come together. Because it seems like it's such a big shift, it can't happen overnight. And it must be a very difficult task to push in that direction against years of doing it a certain way.
Well, there is a tendency within the planning system it's there to protect more than it is to create. And so that's the first thing we need to tackle. So it becomes a more proactive looking outlook from that area. But equally, we need to set an example and we need to show through provision of product what it is that we mean. But I think also there's a subtle message here with that example planning. Because, for example, we have something called the use classes order, which, as Despina says, divides things into offices, industrial shops, and so on and so forth. But if we're looking at town centres for the future, we've got to look at all those use classes, not just as separate entities and separate areas and separate neighbourhoods, but as an integrated community. And this brings us back to our social value question, doesn't it, quite neatly. But we have to look at it as an integrated planning system. And I would personally like to see planning become more activity-based and use-based. So we don't simply talk about for example, offices, but we talk about media buildings and bank buildings and so on and so forth. So we talk about the activities that take place within them, and they might be office, they might be industrial, they might be medical, they might be anything. But we talk about the activities rather than the redundant use class that was invented in 1950-something, I think.
And is that, do you think that's a, is that a realistic ambition, Despina, to tackle the planning system?
Well, it's more about creating awareness. So if you think about the core purpose of the BCO, to focus on research and create a forum for debate and discussion and raise awareness, research creates the evidence that ultimately will build the business case for change. And I think this is why we went down the line of looking deeply into these four pillars, so that we are not simply just saying change needs to happen, but we can begin to build the case for change. And ultimately, what's really interesting is that if you think about enhancing social impact, which is one of the points that you focused on earlier, enhancing social impact commitments are not just the right thing to do, but they actually make good commercial sense. Once you begin to track why that makes good commercial sense, it's good for society and it's good for business and it's good for people. So it's very hard to argue as to why change doesn't need to follow.
How do you start to think about measuring social impact from a, let's say, from a developer's or investor's point of view, such that you can demonstrate to your shareholders that this is something that is beneficial from a value point of view?
That's a really difficult question, isn't it? And it lies at the heart of everything we're trying to do here. I think at this stage, it's just, I mean, everything begins with money, doesn't it? And so I think we've got to begin with the investment community, because it's their money that will drive us ultimately. And I think we need to, as Despina says, take some evidence to them about why this change of direction is important and what it means. At this stage, we're not going to say, if you do a building of this type or develop this type, it's going to create X percent more value. That's not possible at this point. But what is possible is to show them the impact of different ways of doing their activities. So, for example, if we're looking at a town centre renewal project, it might be about understanding how the offices fit into that and what the relevance of the jobs that they might bring to that area are and what the skills are in the area that might be able to fulfil those jobs and to make the developments appropriate to the skills, for example, that are in the area, the demographics that are in the area, and so on and so forth. So it's bringing the social indicators closer together to the investment indicators to make sure that we're building appropriate stock in places that are resilient to change over time.
What's interesting, just to build on what Rob just said, is one of the important questions here is, who is the end customer? Historically, commercial real estate has been a B2B transaction. But actually, what's happening is that it's becoming a B2C relationship. And that changes the role of the investor. So if you think about investors historically have looked at long timelines, one size fits all solutions. That's no longer viable, right? We're going to need to address a very diverse set of permutations of space consumption and commercial models. Every single one of our clients is looking for flexibility and diversity in how they can operate their real estate portfolios. And they're trying to create enhanced employee experience. So you're automatically beginning to shift the value metrics within which a traditional investor would look at long-term resiliency of their investment.
Right, because if I think about, you know, using the UK as an example, you think a lot of town centres and the issues we've had in a lot of town centres, and it was typically a big shopping mall built, and now everyone's going, that's not what we need. You know, you think about, there's a lot of talk around the 15-minute city, which, as we know, comes out of Paris, but the idea to that is you should be able to live, work, shop, play, whatever you want to do within a 15-minute or a short distance, so you've got to have good public transport. But it seems to me those two almost come together in an interesting way, which is it's about mixed use, not about, back to what you were saying, I guess, Despina, it's not we'll put offices here and retail there and industrial on the edge of town and we'll build the infrastructure. It's something much more complex and creative that brings it all together.
So it's demonstrating, if we have a proposal for a particular town centre, for example, it's demonstrating what it means to the community. Yeah. how they can get involved indirectly, directly, day-to-day, whatever. So we no longer build impermeable buildings, for example. We don't build streetscapes that people can't walk through. You know, we build buildings that people can get into and see through and engage in. And businesses that are themselves engaging with communities in some ways that the flexible office sector do. So there's lots of ways this can be done to make it socially relevant.
But there's a really fundamental issue here, which we haven't talked about, which gets in the way, which is that as an industry, we have very siloed thinking, right? And the siloed thinking gets in the way of creating these more dynamic solutions. And that siloed thinking doesn't just happen in terms of zoning and design and operations. We know it exists. But even if you think about, take the transformation that's happened in technology in buildings, right? We should be able to have completely frictionless experiences with our building technology interface, but yet we don't. You know, we can actually, you can order something on Amazon with one click and have it delivered in an hour, but it could take you several hours to book AV in a meeting room. Or book a meeting room for that sense, right? So, or find your colleagues or change the air quality in a building. We should be able to have to learn from all of the interfaces we have with technology in our life, in the way we work and the way office environments respond to human customization and adaption.
And that's exactly why we're looking at this in terms of the implications for those four areas that has been talked about, which are policy and planning, investment and leasing, operations management, and design and construction. Because unless those areas are talking to each other and collaborating and cooperating, we'll end up with the same old problems where you move into a building and the FM hasn't been involved and suddenly it starts to fall over because it's not usable and those kinds of things. So it's about bringing those silos together, bringing more transparency between them.
And then I guess the complication, the added complication back to what you were saying earlier, is this idea of a shift from B2B to C. And of course, the C part, we're all individuals and we all want something slightly different. And not to say businesses don't, but now you've got to design not only the office space as an office, but the office, let's just say using the office as a starting point, the office space as a potentially a retail, the right retail, potentially as the right place that you can play sport, go to the gym, whatever, and so on. So you've got this real complication that you're catering to a very diverse set of age groups, people, nationalities, and so on.
And you're trying to create something that is intuitive and responsive. So because our life has become intuitive and responsive. Everything we do is around that convenience, functionality, intuitive interface with every single aspect of our life, but yet we haven't really translated that into the office. And you know, for me, we were saying earlier that this year marks 40 years of me working in workplace transformation. It is the single most exciting moment in my career in that technology gives us that opportunity and the context of challenges we face gives us that opportunity to completely reinvent.
So I think that's really interesting because what you're suggesting, I think, Despina, is that tech, not to give one more weighting than any of the others, but technology is obviously driving this ability for us to rethink how this could work because it's giving this, or will do in the future, give us a frictionless interface. So whether you want to do it one way or I want to do another, we want something different, the technology will cater to both, which is something we've never really had before.
Well, it's something that I think was made very clear during COVID. Technology left the building in the 90s when the laptop computer was invented, but we assumed that people had to come to the building to work. And what we realized very quickly within just a couple of months of the pandemic was actually everyone remained connected and productive remotely. So it became this really obvious disconnect between our perception of what work was about in relation to place and what the reality of what we could achieve was. And it's the same with smart buildings. You know, we've had smart buildings for at least 30 years. But we're now really looking at not just smart buildings, but more intuitively responsive buildings. And that becomes, I think, incredibly interesting for us as an industry.
Right. So maybe to wrap up, I'll go to you first, Rob, but there's an awful lot in all of that. And obviously, it's not going to happen quickly. So a lot of what we're talking about is not a criticism of the past so much as it takes any industry time to shift, right? So I think in, you know, a lot of what we're seeing in sustainability as a good example is now moving quite quickly. But like you just said, we've had, that's been an issue for 20, 30, 40 years, but no one's really paid much attention to it. Whereas now, you know, we can see stranded assets beginning to happen unless people spend money. We've got premium buildings attracting rents and tenants. So increased rents and tenants. So there's definitely a market shift. And that, I think, will flow through. So what's your kind of, I guess the question is, what's your hope in terms of shifting the perception of the industry? Or what's the one thing or a couple of things that you'd really like to see happen in the next 12 months? And then let's make it realistic, right? Because I think this will take a few years at least.
It's a big agenda, isn't it? I think for me, it comes back to this question of who is the customer. And traditionally, the customer's been the investor. And as Despina quite rightly and eloquently said, the customer's now not the investor, it's the end user, at the very least, if not also the occupier. So what I'd like to see in the short term is the investment community be convinced of that fact, and begin to respond appropriately in terms of understanding that they're building for people, not for investment. And that brings us back to the point about social relevance. If we can link those three things together over the next 12 months, I'll be very happy. The rest of it will take more than my lifetime, I'm sure.
And I guess this is the way I always think about that. It's really both, isn't it? It's always profit, because otherwise the industry wouldn't exist. So it's, whereas I guess to simplify, in the past, it's been profit and not much. Let's say it's just been 90% profit. Now it's profit and maybe people, right? Profit and the consumer. That's so key. Despina?
I think collaboration. I think, you know, going back to the point I made about silos, as an industry, we need to create alignment, collective accountability, and engage a variety of stakeholders. We will not be able to deliver social impact and value unless we really engage the end users, the wider community, all of the different stakeholders that inform the built environment. And I think that is what I hope I can help do in the next 12 months is bring that greater collaboration with the purpose of being able to drive value for cities, communities, people, both at the level of resilient investment and inspiring places.
Great. I think that's a fabulous place to stop, the idea of diversity of thought and business and industry really driving massive change. Thank you, Rob. Thank you, Despina. Pleasure having you here. Your first person. And talk to you soon.
Thank you, Michael.